It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
From the WEEI studios, 93.7 WEEI FM and HD1, Lawrence, Boston, and Odyssey Sports Station.
Why we look at what we're doing sports science wise, we'll come up with answers. You know, right now I don't have an answer for you.
Do you think conditioning or endurance or anything like that has been an issue?
We thought so during camp, but we don't think so anymore.
Jim, do you question whether they're listening?
No, I don't question that.
So what's preventing it from the message getting through?
It's up for you guys to figure that out and come up with a reason. We just weren't good enough. You guys can write what you guys think is the malaise on the team and what's going wrong. We're just not playing good enough.
The Afternoon Show with Christian Arcan and Andy Hart starts now on WEEI.
Jim Montgomery, after losing in overtime to the Ottawa Senators, Bruins teetering. Monty teetering. Bruins take on the Blues tonight. Does kind of feel like the end days of this Montgomery regime, doesn't it? I mean, not even if you take into account what we heard from Scoops Keefe, who I trust with my life when it comes to these Bruins scoops for sure. Just, I mean, you heard those quotes. Yeah, you guys are going to write what you're going to write. Sounds like a defeated guy. Sounds like a broken guy.
Yeah.
Sounds like a guy who knows the axe is swinging and he's just waiting to, you know, make sure he doesn't see it when it's coming. Like, you know what I mean? Like that kind of thing. Just make sure, you know what? Do what you're going to do. Just make it quick. You know, that's what that sounded like. That's a guy resigned to his fate is what it sounded
and
like.
And I get it because this has been hanging over his head for a while now. And at some point, you just got to say, F it. I'm going to show up. I'm going to coach a game. We're going to either win or lose. Lately, you know, they've won enough games to save my job and string this out a little further, and maybe that continues to happen. The thing that I found interesting there is, so he clearly had concerns about the team's conditioning
yep.
in the summer.
Absolutely.
That's concerning.
It is.
So did he see this coming? Did he have concerns about a slow start based off of that?
If he did, he never mentioned it.
Right.
We didn't hear a lot about that.
You don't really want to offer it up, I feel like.
So, yeah, all my guys are fat and slow, and they're not really ready to start the season, et cetera. And I don't know who exactly he's talking about. I don't know which of these guys. Is it the usual suspects? Is it some of the new players? Is it some of the young guys? Is it some of the veteran? Like, who
He'll
is
let
it?
You figure that out.
I guess. I mean, you can probably figure it out if you look at the numbers. But I do think, and you watch some of these games, they are. They look slower. They look slower. Sluggish. I think that's in part because they tried to get bigger and tougher, and that's a byproduct of what happens when you do that. Some of the guys that they brought in to be big, tough guys got sent down to Providence and may never come back. So I don't know if that's necessarily, in retrospect, something that you look at and say, wow, Jim Montgomery really screwed that up. That's not a Jim Montgomery thing. Who made the team bigger and slower?
But bigger and slower doesn't mean out of shape. Bigger and slower means at your best, you're still big and slow.
Right.
Your skills, your makeup. Out of shape is you're not ready to practice to open camp, or you're not ready to open the season. You're slower, you're fatter, you're like Mike Onwenu to change sports. There was a lot of accusations. I mean, Mike Lombardi said he gained 80 pounds and got fat and happy after the contract.
Okay.
That, like, you know, at his best, he's a pretty good player.
But imagine putting on 80 pounds in one summer.
Sounds like it's one of those things. It sounds like it would be fun, but I feel like at some point it would stop being fun.
Because
you'd feel awful.
Yeah. You wouldn't feel good.
80 pounds is a lot of weight.
I know. That's a lot, yes.
Like, I feel like the first 20, 25 might be fun. You're just like, yes, I'll have dessert. Yeah. Yes, I'll have an app. Yes, I'll have another drink.
Give me that freshman 15 right
Absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely. Yeah. But then at some point, you're like, it's like when you go on vacation, and sometimes you just want to come home and eat a normal, simple meal in your kitchen.
Yep.
I feel like 20 pounds in, I would be like, all right, I need to push away for
80 pounds. People are saying he gained 80 pounds?
Mike Lombardi, not okay. People. Like one person. He definitely gained weight. I know he was overweight.
So that's a swing from like what, like 260 to 340 or?
No. Mike Onwenu? That would
300
be,
to 380?
That would be like 320 to 400 probably.
Okay, so we're talking in the Trent Brown stratosphere here.
Yeah, he there's a reason they call him Big Mike.
Right.
He big man.
I didn't think he was 400 pounds.
And you're holding me to this that Mike Lombardi's
holding you to this. He was overweight.
So let's
and I know
just say,
Lombardi likes to exaggerate
things.
Let's
say he
put
on 50 pounds. Sure. It's kind of the same thing.
Still a lot, yes.
Yeah, like he put on a bunch of weight after the contract and was overweight when he hit camp.
Imagine if Pasternak put on 80 pounds.
Yeah, I don't think that's the case.
That'd be pretty funny.
Why, you think he's one of the candidates that was fat and out of shape?
Who was out of shape? I could see that. And he did say that he had this injury, which we'll get to when we talk with Bridget Prue, who's going to be joining the show here in about 20 minutes. Very exciting. But yeah, Pasternak now comes out and says, hey, by the way, I had this offseason injury, and, you know, it was right that I got benched and blah, 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 and all this stuff. And everyone's like, what? What are you talking about? That's we didn't hear anything about an offseason injury. We know that Marchand had surgery in the offseason, and he's had a million surgeries, and he's old, and, you know, maybe he's a guy who's not got the usual pep in his step. Fine. I think we make an exception for someone like him. For Pasternak, now all of a sudden this mystery injury pops up, and we all have to be like, oh, yeah, right, okay, well, that explains it. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
That's an excuse.
Right.
That's what it feels like. Now, there may be some truth, because I always say excuses are reasons given by losers, and they're a losing hockey team, and he, you know, hasn't been up to snuff. He's part of the problem. I feel like we say the same thing about it. What about your boy? Was he fat and out of shape? Does he get counted in there, Swayman?
I don't know if he's one
of those. Also, he wasn't really in camp, so it's hard to tell.
Sure.
And if you believe Monty that they worried about it in camp, but then not so much now, which I don't know if I believe that either.
Yeah.
That's a weird parsing of sort of a line in the sand.
Yeah, can you play that part again, Stiz, just from that opening thing? They asked him three questions. The first one was about sports science, and then it was conditioning. And you say, yeah, you know, we had the conditioning was a problem in camp, but now it's great. It's like, right. I don't think
it's... not so during camp, but we don't think so anymore.
That, really? You don't? You don't think so anymore?
It's
sure about
in
that?
Shape. Now everybody's in shape.
Which seems like nobody's in shape.
And also, when you play catch-up, you don't really catch up. Like, there's a reason you're supposed to get in shape, and there's a reason coaches, strength and conditioning coaches, sports science people, they process it a certain way, right? Like, they planned a build-up to get you in shape for the regular season.
Yep.
You know, certain amount of minutes, certain amount of throws in spring training, whatever it may be. So if you're in bad shape and have to get up to average first and then start the process, well, you're always playing catch up. You're not going to be right to start the year. You're not going to be in mid-season form by mid-season.
Right.
Because you're chasing. You're chasing something that you screwed up from the get-go.
Yeah. And listen, I don't think it was conditioning that prevented them from putting a shot on Linus Allmark for the entire third period this past weekend. I don't think that was necessarily a conditioning thing. I think that was a question of desire. I think that was a question of playing hard and passing and not turning the puck over and whatever. I mean, there was a lot of reasons why I think that happened, mostly because they couldn't get the puck into the zone for most of that period. But either way, that's beyond, they're a little out of shape. That's beyond, the head coach has lost the room a little bit. Like, these are problems that the Bruins haven't had in a long time. These are the type of problems that you look at and think, man, there was a couple of years in the early aughts where they missed the playoffs, right? Like, it seems like a long time ago. And it seems like we're careening towards that now. Not, oh, well, it's going to be another disappointing first-round exit. Like, are they going to make the playoffs this season? Are they good enough to maintain that? Do they have that kind of core right now? And I'm not sure what the answer to that question is. I thought I did.
It's up for you guys to figure that out.
Thank you.
And I think he's being honest.
It is. I mean, right? He doesn't know. He's trying everything. He's tried jumbling everything. Yeah. He's mixed and matched all the lines. He sent guys down to Providence. Poitras down to Providence now.
Got into it with Marchand.
Don't
bench Pasta. Like, he's tried seemingly everything at his disposal, and it hasn't worked. So I think when he says that, sometimes coaches are snarky and just, I'll leave that up to you guys, you geniuses, to figure out. It's a snarky comment. I think this is more of a, he's kind of at his wit's end. He's kind of at a loss. And he's like, maybe I'll read it in one of your columns and figure it out when you guys figure it out. It's a little bit in a different way. There is some here with Cora. Remember when Cora was talking about the sports science and we fade every year and you start to question what you're doing? The difference would be, I'm guessing, and maybe we can ask Bridget this when she gets in here, but I'm guessing he treated the bulk of everything he did this training camp similar to the previous two when they got off to hot starts, correct?
Yeah.
So his way worked, unlike Cora's way, which fades late in the year every year, and that's why he starts to question his way. Montgomery
fades late in the year, too.
Well, yeah, but now now it's not even working out of the gates. Mm-hmm. Like, that would have been something he could have looked at. But now he's like, wait a minute. I did the exact same thing, and we were really, really good those other 2 years. What the hell's going on here? So maybe that's where I think he probably thinks it's not a him problem, but we look at the whole team fading, and we're like, well, there's only one way you could blame, you know, it's the coach.
Right.
It's sort of obvious. If everybody's struggling, then the coach did something wrong. But I think he's probably saying, I don't know. I did it the same way I always do it, and it's worked before.
Yep, and I think he's right to think that way. And I do think the problems here go beyond him. However, it's hard to fire everybody, and it's a lot easier to fire the head coach, and it seems like we're heading in that direction. We'll find out more about that. Did you say Bridget's coming in here? I thought she was on the phone.
No, I think she's calling.
She's calling in on the phone. Okay, so whatever. Yeah, Bridget Prue of ESPN. How about of WEEI and also of NESN, not ESPN, will be joining us on the phone here in about 10 minutes. We will get her take on the Bruins, the season so far, Jim Montgomery, the roster that's been assembled here by Don Sweeney, and even Cam Neely, the leadership in this organization. How's it working out so far? Along with this mysterious David Pastrnak injury, more Bruins with Bridget Prue right after Stiz gets you caught up on what's trending. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Left 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Now, more of Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI.
To the referee, back of the net, Pastra, centered, they score! David Pastrnak took a juicy feed!
David Pastrnak, who, by the way, was injured in the offseason. He said this the other day, and we'll get to Bridget Prue here in just 1 second. He said, I was injured for a month and a half in the summer. This was in an article in Czech that was translated to English. He said, not so much physically. Because then there was still a lot of time, but the problem was mainly mental, because in the summer, I normally prepare for the season, and I haven't been injured for so long, and mentally, it's hard when you can't work for a month and a half. At this stage, nothing to do, but I feel better and better with each match. Our own Scott McLaughlin said that he, in the World Championship, he sustained some sort of ailment, but we did not get an actual definition of what injury he suffered. And this was all reported in another language, so maybe there was something lost in translation there. But either way, he said, I had bumps and bruises. I couldn't train for a little bit, and I had to take a couple of weeks off. Here for more on that is our own Bridget Prue, WEEI.com, and also doing work for NESN. Bridget, welcome. How you doing?
I'm doing good, guys. I miss you guys.
We miss you too, Bridget. Nice to have you on the show here. I believe this is your maiden voyage on the newly revamped WEEI afternoon show, so we welcome you.
Yes, it is.
So, listen, David Pastrnak now, and we know that your comrade there, Scott McLaughlin, had had some reporting on this as well. Did everyone know about this? Was this something you hockey people all knew about and you decided just not to tell anybody, or is this a surprise to you guys too?
Well, it was something that just kind of felt like it went away, like it wasn't going to be a story. So we knew that he missed. He told, in English, he told the Bruins reporters, you know, 3 to 4 weeks he was dealing with an injury, but never actually fully stopped training, just had to kind of modify it to skip certain things. So it didn't really feel like a big story at the time. And now it kind of comes back up only because the play, you see a difference in his play compared to past seasons. And you wonder, did this actually affect his training so much so that his timing is still off?
So do you think this could be described as an excuse?
I don't think he's using it as an excuse. I think maybe it just helps explain what we're seeing, because I don't think Pastrnak has tried to use it that way. He's mm-hmm. been pretty accountable for the way that he's been playing so far. But he also made sure to say, because he was asked about it today, that he feels like he's better now. So he was trying to pretty much put it behind him.
What did you think about Montgomery benching him, and do you think that in a time where there's so much heat on the head coach, a move like that was smart or not so smart?
I think it was okay to do. I think it wasn't like Pastrnak was playing so well that it didn't make sense. I think that sometimes you do have to send a message to your best players that they're the ones who need to set the tone. So I don't think it's an issue to bench someone like that. If anything, it makes everyone realize if he does it to somebody like Pastrnak, he could easily do it to them too.
Do you believe this Montgomery? Well, first of all, it started as a Montgomery no contract extension, lame duck status was hanging over the team. Now it's, is he going to be fired at any moment? Is that sort of a black cloud hanging over this team and the coach right now?
I think it's still hanging there. Yeah, I think there was right before the Philadelphia game that they ended up winning, I thought he was going to be gone that weekend. Scott and I actually went to a BU hockey game together, and we were ready to have to leave and write a story about it if it happened, because I think that's how close it's come a few times with losses to him losing his job. And you can see the frustration. We had a really tense press conference after the Bruins lost against Ottawa. It was really short. He was kind of just in a bad mood. And I think that that is something that everybody kind of feels in the room. Though I will say, because I've heard this asked by a few people, like, has he lost the room? No, I still feel like the players are supportive of him being the coach. I still think they want him to be there. I just think they haven't figured it out.
Yeah, they really haven't, as demonstrated by that third period over the weekend where they didn't put a single shot on Linus Ullmark. That to me, Bridget, and you may disagree, but that to me seems like something beyond conditioning, beyond Jim Montgomery. Like, this seems like a bigger problem than that, and there's been little things like this over the... I know they only lost the game by one, and it did go to overtime, but no shots in the third in a game with your old goalie. Like, that seems like a motivating factor type of game, and it just didn't seem to be there. Is the rot bigger than just some conditioning issues or the head coach maybe losing a bit of his grip over the room and things like that? Do you think it's more than that?
I think it's just a big confidence issue. I think it seeps into all of the areas of their game. And then when something goes wrong, it cuts away at their confidence even more. So when they're not successful on the power play, then you see it affect their 5-on-5 play. It affects their offense. And it just kind of seems like a contagious lack of confidence has hurt them really on.
Brad Marchand has had his ups and downs this season, a couple key overtime goals that maybe saved Monty. But probably hasn't played at the level he would like to play at. Do you think that's part of the issues of this team? Do you think he could be getting old and sort of on the backside of it now? Like, what's your takeaway on the way Brad Marchand's played to start the year?
I don't think he looks old. I don't think he looks like he's completely slowed down. I think he's still, he's on the later side of his career for sure. And he's in the last year of his contract as well. In terms of what he could be doing differently, I think he started to look better recently, started to get more shots on goal, but he's supposed to be the kind of guy that motivates guys in the locker room. And so that's really important as the captain for him to keep doing that. He's somebody that holds people accountable, and he's somebody that leads by example too. So obviously you're a leader on the team. Sometimes you get blamed when the confidence isn't there, when the pace isn't there, because you're supposed to set an example. And so he's going to have to continue to do that.
Don Sweeney's offseason, I think, is one that most fans were happy with, and I think most of the people who cover the team were enthusiastic about some of the pickups that were made in Zadorov and Lindholm and what have you, some of the other guys who are in Providence now, too, the other forwards. But it does seem like these guys, whether they're not a good fit or they haven't quite found the chemistry yet, or in some cases maybe just aren't quick enough to be out there, it seems like sometimes. What do you think now, 14, 15 games in, has your opinion or at all changed on Sweeney's offseason, or was it ever really that high?
It was much higher, I would say, than what they've been playing to right now. It's kind of funny. For the podcast that we have, me and Scott, we had these preseason predictions, and we had like our bold predictions, and all of them look really bad right now because we thought that those guys were going to do more. Like, one of my bold predictions for this season was that the Lindholm, Zacha, Pasternak line was going to be one of the top five lines in the NHL, and they're not even a line anymore because they didn't play that well together. And so I think the chemistry still needs to get built with Elias Lindholm, and certainly, he's not the only one to blame in the offense and the power play for things not going right so far. But, yeah, I thought that he would mesh better with Pasternak. Maybe they both were dealing with preseason injuries that stopped them from being able to create the chemistry. And then Nikita Zadorov, I think he's been kind of frustrating so far in his first, chunk of games with the Bruins. I think he's looked behind the play. I think he's looked like he doesn't always make the best decisions. So even though those two guys were probably the two best available players for the Bruins to get, they needed a center. They needed a top line center. They needed a big defenseman to try to help counter the Florida Panthers. So far, it hasn't panned out. But if you make the playoffs and those guys can do what you need them to do in the playoffs, then pretty much all is forgiven.
So if I asked you if you could come up with a three-step plan to fix what ails the Bruins right now, putting you on the spot, would you have three steps at the top of your list?
Thank you for putting me on the spot, Andy. to fix the Bruins malaise, as Coach Montgomery put it the other day.
Yep.
Well, first of all, I definitely know what number one is. And number one is just get more pucks in the net. I know that sounds like the cliche.
I like it. I like where this is going.
Good start.
But you, especially from the point, like, you've got to get shots through from the point. You've got to allow guys to go to work on rebounds. Just get the puck to the net. Kind of create more chaos, because it feels like they're stagnant in the offensive zone. It feels like they're doing a lot of passing and not moving their feet, but just moving the puck. They need to get more movement in their offense. They also need to get more shots on goal. That's the first and foremost thing they need to do. I don't know if I got another two that can come in and help, because that's just the really important one.
Okay.
Is Sweeney skating? No pun intended, but is he skating on the, I didn't know how else to say it. But is he avoiding blame for this right now? Do you think he should be, or that he is at this point, and that it's the right sort of slice of blame pie getting cut out here?
If he ends up firing Montgomery, like, obviously that's one of the first steps you take to kind of cover your own trail, right? Try to change that before anything gets done to your position. I personally don't blame him for the offseason acquisitions. I don't think he did a bad job. Like, I think the Swayman contract obviously was drawn out, but he ends up getting it done. So that's a good thing for Sweeney. Like, I think he's done a lot of the right things, and on the ice, it's not working out so far. I think he needs to continue to work through that. I don't think he deserves as much of the blame as the players are number one.
Mm-hmm.
Coach and coaching staff is number two, and I would put Sweeney third. And guys, I mean, he sent Matt Potcher down today. That was a Sweeney decision. And I know some people aren't happy with it. I don't know if you want to talk about that at all, but that's one of the other moves he made recently.
Who's not happy with it?
I mean, the internet, Bruins fans.
Oh.
Potcher's a likable player. So I saw some backlash about that today.
Are you not happy about it? Do you think that was the right move?
I'm 50-50 with it, because I like him as a player. I think he's one of the more creative guys on the team. His 5-on-5 numbers have been decent, but he does only have one goal in his 14 games played, and it was against a bad Flyers team. So I think he could develop more in Providence. I don't think it's a huge deal, but I think that also the lineup had very few guys that were creating offense as it is. So it feels like taking that piece away might hurt the team.
So just to circle back around where we started, you said there were multiple times where you thought that was the day that Montgomery was going to be fired. Do you think, how long can this go on where people like you that are insiders that are there every day are thinking this is the day he's canned? How does this play out?
Well, I think the good news for him is if the Bruins can take advantage of some of the weaker opponents that they have on their upcoming schedule, including tonight against St. Louis, like, if they can get some wins over those easy teams, then he's probably safe. And the Bruins will be in playoff position come, the Thanksgiving unofficial deadline. And
yep.
And that will correct the ship. But if they lose to those bad teams, you can be pretty much certain that he's gone.
What would you guess the overall attitude towards Jeremy Swayman is within the organization right now? Buyer's remorse, anything like that? I mean, he hasn't been great. Certainly not living up to the contract so far. Any sort of animosity there, do you think?
I don't think so. But it is funny. We don't talk about Swayman a lot this season. I feel like he took up so much of the storylines in the offseason, and him and Ullmark last year were fan favorites. And I feel like maybe he's a little bit more under the radar now. Maybe he's not quite as well received after the negotiations. And certainly he set himself up to have a slower start to the season by not being able to attend any training camp. So, but I don't feel that the backlash within the team, I mean, he's still good buddies with pretty much everyone. I still think that the coaches are confident in him. Everybody's still confident in him, but it definitely isn't the best hockey that he's played over the last few seasons. And maybe that comes down to the missing training camp as well.
based on your predictions on your podcast, which were optimistic, I'm going to guess you didn't.
And wrong.
And wrong. It happens. Hey, I said the Patriots might go 0-17. They got three wins already. So it happens to the best of us. We're wrong. I was close. You were close.
I said the Patriots could beat the Niners this year.
Yeah. So yeah. We're all wrong. It's one group of wrong here on the radio here at WEEI.
That's what the W stands for.
Did you see anything? Because you have Monty admitting, yeah, we thought being out of shape was an issue in training camp. Did you see anything weird in training camp? Did he change anything in the way he ran things? Did you see anything in the way the players acted that led you to believe a coach and a team that normally gets off to a hot start would get off to a horrific start?
Well, yeah, the pace wasn't there. But in the time, because I went to pretty much every day of training camp,
yep.
At the time I wasn't as concerned about it because you're like, okay, they're ramping up, it's not going to look like game speed, but certainly it should have been game speed because now they're at this slower pace to start the season, whereas if they had more intense training camp, then maybe they wouldn't be in this situation. But for sure, it was maybe like 75% speed compared to needing to be at 100%. And also, some guys didn't play very much at all in training camp. Like Charlie Coyle, we're still not sure. Maybe he was dealing with something because he only got into one preseason game towards the end. And obviously Elias Lindholm was dealing with an injury that kept him out of a lot of the preseason. So there were guys that didn't get in and didn't get full reps, and definitely they weren't going at full speed. So I think it did affect their season.
That is the voice.
And obviously that's on the coach.
Excuse me, I jumped in there too early.
Come
that is the voice of Bridget Prue, a Bruins writer here at WEEI, co-host of the Skate Pod and Sunday Skate, which begins after football season's over. I know I'm missing something. You do play-by-play for Hockey East and the Boston Fleet, right? Did I get everything? Did I miss something?
I think you got most of it.
Okay, there you go. Bridget Prue, very busy lady. Thank you so much for the time today. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
All right.
Thanks, Bridget.
It's Bridget joining us here on WEEI Afternoons. If you missed any of that, you can go back and listen to the podcast anytime. Just subscribe to WEEI Afternoons on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts. Interesting stuff there.
I thought that was very interesting at the end. That
75%.
They're going 75%, but I'm sure they're just ramping up. They never ramped up. Like, isn't that what it looks like? They've been bitching all along that they're a step behind. They're thinking too much. They're not playing. It's the 75%. Why were they going 75%? Now, the question is 75% because you were out of shape, 75% because guys were coming back from injuries, 75% because, I don't know, you're fat and happy and just think you can roll out of bed and win early in the season because that's, as you've said, that's the way the Bruins do it. We win early, we fade late.
Yeah.
So we'll just come in 75%, win early, maybe we won't fade. But that's your answer right there. If you prepare at 75%, it's probably not surprising. You look like you're playing at 75%.
Don't you think the way that Florida said, this is why those Florida games stuck in my craw so much, Andy. After the way that Florida series went with Pastrnak getting punched in the face by Tkachuk and Sam, Reinhardt or the other one, coming over and punching
Sam Bennett.
Sam Bennett, thank you. Coming over and punching Marchand in the face and literally knocking you guys out. I can't believe that they would come into camp the next season. And I know that those two guys in particular were injured in the offseason and had to deal with things. But the rest of that team, being on the ice for that, watching that happen, seeing that happen to your leaders, to your best players, and then they come back 75% and can't, like, that's...
And that's coaching.
That's a problem.
As she said, that's coaching.
A big, big problem,
like,
yeah.
You see it. If Bridget sees it, then Montgomery sees it. So he's either allowing it or instructing it, right? Those are the only two options. Because if you like it, then they're doing what you all. You know what, guys? We're going to take it easy so we don't whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Load management. I remember a few years ago, Matthew Judon was doing that in August because everybody said his first season here, he faded in December.
Right.
And I still would like to see some evidence and science. Like, if I take my time in August, that gives me more energy in December. 4 months later, it seems flawed to me. I don't know if I make a direct connection. But he either is instructing them.
I'm going to make it that far.
He's either instructing them to go 75% or he's allowing it because he's got to be able to see it because I'm pretty sure, no disrespect to Bridget, but I don't think she sees and knows more about hockey than the head coach of the team does. He should be able to see 75% if she sees 75%.
Are you suggesting Bridget should be the head coach of the team? I think the Twitch chat would be okay with that.
My one flaw as the interviewer is I asked for a 3-step plan and she gave me one.
It's true.
It was a good one.
Yeah. It's kind of like one and a half. There was like a half a step after that.
But that would be my one concern.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't have a three-step plan.
Yeah, you know,
I feel like everybody
did
to
put her on the spot.
Three-step plan.
Yeah.
Like when we started this new show, we had three steps involved.
Mm-hmm. Yell at each other.
Hire me, hire you, and
call the show. Call the show WEEI Afternoon.
Boom, we got a show. Three steps.
There's
nailed it.
Right there. Got it. 617-779-7937 is your phone number if you want to jump in on the Bruins conversation. Week 10 of the NFL is officially in the books after Monday Night Football, and that means we'll get caught up here and catch you all up on Bill Watch next.
A-U-D-A-C-Y. Type that into your app search, then download.
More of Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI.
To me, the bigger thing is just where the Bears are. I mean, they can't protect. They can't move the ball. They can't score any points. Jacksonville, same situation. I mean, you have several of these teams that just... We talked about this at the beginning of the year, Pat, in Chicago. You know, they have this all-star quarterback, these all-star receivers, you know, the greatest skill players in the history of football. And the offensive line's a problem. They can't run the ball. They can't protect. Swift is doing all he can, but, you know, it's just, you know, hard.
Yeah, Bill. Rookie quarterbacks, none of them are good.
Right.
Wide receivers, who needs that? Sure. It's a great attitude to have, especially for a guy who neglected his offense to the point of getting fired for it, which I'm still surprised he's talking that way. Either way, that's not why we played that clip. We played that clip because a week now is in the books, week 10 in the NFL season. We do this after every week. We take a look around the NFL. We see which coaches may or may not be on the hot seat in a little segment we like to call...
It was up front.
Bill Watch.
Bill Watch.
I know I say this every time. We worked very hard on that. On that piece of production that you just heard right there. Bill Watch.
Tremendous.
Who are we looking at? Who is number one on the Bill Watch?
I mean... The most unstable franchise right now of legitimate franchises. I mean, you could argue Chicago, but is Dallas.
Yeah.
I mean, they're bitching about the lights, and they CeeDee Lamb wants them to put shades, and he's ripping them. Did you see it turn into a rip job on McCarthy?
I did see that, yes.
Yeah, we know which we know where the sun is when we do the coin toss.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a shot at him.
Yep.
It's kind of like we were talking about Mayo and the wind in overtime.
Well, the sun moved from here to here in the course of the game. I've never seen that before.
But they're a mess, and I know the hot one is Deion Sanders, that he's... You know, he'll get the respect of these players because he's better than any of them can ever think of being, and they immediately... Well, so would Bill Belichick because he's the greatest coach of all time. So I was listening to...
I don't think Deion's better. Like, is he better than Micah Parsons?
Yeah.
You think?
Yeah.
I think Micah Parsons is a Hall of Famer, or will be a Hall of Famer.
And as Deion says, I'm not just in the Hall of Fame. They should have a special wing for players like me. Deion's one of the greatest players to ever play this game. If there were an all-NFL team, Deion's on it.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't know if Micah Parsons is, because he's got to get past, like, LT.
True.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Deion, and that's a... I
put Micah Parsons on, like, not at LT level, but, I mean, I think that he's the modern equivalent.
No, really good.
And Lawrence Taylor I put on the Deion level, so I don't know. I mean, I think that's...
Well,
I don't think that's out of the question.
Lawrence Taylor and Deion, and we should do this sometime.
Yeah.
Because Deion, I love this idea from Deion. A special part of the hall where there's an all NFL team and all Hall of Fame team.
Mm-hmm.
So Tom Brady's the quarterback.
Yep. It's like Tom Brady, Jim Brown, you know, like that type of thing. Right,
and if you want to put Micah Parsons on, you have to decide who bumps. Does he bump LT off the outside linebacker position? Mm-hmm. I think it's a fun thing. And then,
because
it's not saying you can't replace Joe Montana would have been the quarterback until Tom Brady said, Joe, sorry, you're going back in the regular room with the other busts down there. I'm taking the all time team. But no, Deion Sanders, I think. And he's winning. You know this. He's actually finally winning.
Sure is.
The hype of the first couple years has actually led to victories this year. They could win the Big 12. They're going to be in the college football playoff. Like, that whole thing, maybe he peaks at the right time and Shador leaves and he leaves too. And I know the dream would be probably to bring Shador to Dallas with him, but I don't think that's really possible with the contract for Dak, who's out for the season. But I think Bill has to be in that conversation. It's been the likely candidate all along. But I do mention disastrous teams. They still have a coach, Matt Eberflus. They don't have an offense coordinator, really, but they got a coach. But we've mentioned the Bengals with history as part of the draw, Paul Brown, and the legacy. Bill loves the Bears. He loves, not necessarily the one people think of, George Halas. He does, but Clark Shaughnessy is all-time great coach there. Okay. Changed the passing game forever. I forget the roots of it. Went came from Stanford, did something. I did a whole story with Bill where he went off on a Clark Shaughnessy rant that I kind of lost interest in halfway through, disrespectfully, but I'm just telling you.
Clark Shaughnessy was born in 1892.
Yeah, he was an old guy.
He really was.
But he's like an all-time great coach. He changed everything. I think the passing game. I think he revolutionized the passing game somehow. He did something. But Bill loves him. Bears.
He's sometimes called the father of the T formation and the original founder of the forward pass.
See?
He was the first guy to go, you know what? I should throw this thing.
Why do we just run with it when I can throw it to that guy down there?
Hey, come here. Bill, come here. I'm going to throw it to you. What do you think of that? Let's try it. Huddle up, everybody. I got an idea. Yeah. I'm going to take the ball, and I'm going to throw it, all right? And everyone's like, whoa, Clark, hey, come on, man. That's a radical idea.
And everybody else is like, are we allowed to do that?
Throw the ball?
And if so, why didn't we think of this 40 years ago when we were getting killed?
Yeah, seriously.
But I do think the Bears, I would add on that level of historical franchise, but now there's a lot going on there because Bill hates the GM polls. He's been taking pot shots at him all offseason. They also have a weird political thing going on where they might move out of Chicago to the suburbs, and I don't know if he would want to join sort of that world, that fracas. I don't know if that's a word, so let's just skip
fracas?
It.
Fracas? No. Fracas? Fracas? Fracas.
Fracas. Yeah, and landed it on the third
Close
try.
Close enough, yeah. I know what you meant.
Also, would he want to work with Caleb Williams? Because he says no diva quarterbacks. That looks like a diva quarterback.
100% it does. I mean, that's a lot closer to Mac Jones than I'd say most of the other guys there. By the way, Clark Shaughnessy, so old, his grandson is a drummer in the Grateful Dead.
Wow. Yeah,
imagine how old you have to be for your grandson to be an original member of the Grateful Dead.
That's a pretty cool footnote, though.
That's an old fella right there. Yeah, Bill Kreutzmann.
The guy who is still with us. The forward pass is the drummer in the Grateful Dead.
Yep. Who is still with us, still touring with Dead & Company and all that. How about that?
Wow.
Pretty interesting there. Anyway, 617-779-7937. We got Bill Watch right now with the Chicago Bears. The New York Giants certainly have to be up there, as it seems like Daboll is getting closer and closer to being one of the coaches who gets let's go, I think. Dennis Allen already gone. There's an interim situation there. I don't think that that's necessarily going to be a big Belichick potential landing spot. And then there's also the unfortunate, if you're Bill and part of the Belichick family anyway, or dating Bill Belichick at this point and want him out of the house, there's also the unfortunate reality of there's going to be a lot of Ben Johnson types who are going to be looking for jobs next year. Young, innovative, offensive minds who I think, much like last season, not all of them, but a good amount, were considered hot prospects and maybe deprioritized, if that's even a word, Bill Belichick, and how much interest there would be in a guy like him and a 72-year-old defensive head coach who had a very bad time with his rookie quarterback that he drafted a couple years ago. So I do think that's still going to be hanging over him, no matter how much you might like his podcast or his appearance on the Manning Cast or any of the other stuff that he's doing. There's still the matter of all the competition there's going to be out there, and the fact that Bill is still coming off of a 4-win season and a ruined rookie quarterback.
So you clearly didn't listen to Let's Go podcast last night with Mike Tyson and Bill Belichick, both discussing the fact that age is just a number.
Sure.
58 is just a number for Mike Tyson as he faces a Jake Paul. Or whatever. Yeah. And Bill said, I agree with you, Iron Mike. Age is just a number there. I say that about mine, too. No, that's a consideration. And this is going to be, it's a pretty good field of potential coaches, because I think Slowick and Johnson are hot offensive coordinator, marry him with my quarterback commodities. Then you have Bill Belichick, whatever you think of him, a living legend. You have Mike Vrabel, who's somewhere in the middle, former coach of the year, defensive mind, but not nearly as old as Bill, but is established. I think it's kind of an interesting class of candidates, right? Those names right there, four candidates, look like pretty good candidates to me.
How about all the coaches who are going to get fired, too? Probably Brian Daboll, Kevin Stefanski. They might get jobs.
I don't think either of those guys is getting a job as a head coach. I think those guys will be sliding into OC jobs. Josh McDaniels, Brian Daboll, and Stefanski will all be offensive coordinators in the National Football League next year. And some of them will have to replace the guys that are
taking head coaching jobs.
Josh McDaniels, my guy. Wouldn't he make sense to go to Houston? because Nick Caserio, his college football teammate,
right,
is the GM, and they're going to be replacing an offensive coordinator. I think that would be a perfect job for Josh to go to Houston.
Yeah, I think so. And I think someone like Stefanski, who's a two-time coach of the year, probably will get another shot at a head coaching job before they kick him to offensive coordinator. I don't necessarily know about Daboll.
I think he
stinks. Daboll, this, well, whatever, I'm just saying, he's got a resume, and that helps when you're looking for a head coaching job. Daboll doesn't have that same kind of resume, so I could see him going to offensive coordinator. I think that'd be a nice fit for the Patriots, but a guy like him, offensive core, there's a lot of teams out there that are going to want to take a crack at Brian Daboll as an offensive coordinator.
Yep.
Young quarterbacks, whoever. A lot of these teams, I think, would be happy to bring him in. You're going to be competing with all of them. And as much as Drake May is a nice draw, and I do think that he is, he's a good draw for this team, he's it. He's the only draw for this team. And there's other teams that have more to offer.
And so, he could be paired with like a guy like Mike Vrabel.
Right.
You could bring in a strong defensive head coach, marry him up with Daboll, mm-hmm, who was in New England with Vrabel. So they have an existing relationship of some sort, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
I know they have a relationship. I'm assuming it's good.
They've met. Yeah.
Right. They work together. That could be a plan that I could see a team falling in love with. Wouldn't you like that? If you could say, Brian Daboll will run my quarterback, Mike Vrabel will run my team.
Certainly wouldn't hate it. Let's go to Adam in the car here before the top of the hour. Go ahead, Adam.
Guys, appreciate the team as always. Wanted to chime in here on the coaching process, specifically when you referenced Ben Johnson, mm-hmm, and what he's going to have available to him. He's not going to leave Detroit. It might sound crazy, but...
All right, your phone's breaking up, so I'm going to pop you on hold. Ben Johnson not leaving Detroit. Normally, I'd say, well, why not if he gets a head coaching opportunity? But Bobby Slowik didn't leave Houston. You know, other guys have not left.
Ben Johnson didn't leave Detroit last year.
Right, he could have left last year. Frank Smith could have left Miami. A lot of guys could have left different places where they were considered good offensive coordinators, even if they were play calling underneath the offensive head coach. I think that in some cases, you look around and say, you know what, this isn't the time to go out there and latch on to a bad team and start my head coach career in a situation I don't want to be in. I'll wait for a better situation and wait for better offers. I think that that's a reality of this. I think that's something that these guys do, absolutely. Especially someone like Slowik or someone like Ben Johnson, guys that they know there's a market for out there. Every once in a while, you'll get who was the guy in Kansas City?
Eric Bieniemy.
Bieniemy, thank you. Yeah, who's sticks around too long, and you're like, well, wait a minute, how come this guy's not getting any offers? And then he gets one, and it doesn't work out. But in general, I think those guys get plucked out right away. They get offers to be a head coach. They usually take them, and when they don't, it's because they think they're going to find something better. They think something better is going to come along, and they don't like the potential job openings that are out there, and so they stick around in Houston or wherever they were. I think it's as simple as that.
Yeah, I would just be careful if I were those guys, because I think if somebody's offering you a five-year deal at $50 million,
right,
take it.
Yeah.
Because guess what? In a hurry, and sometimes you think it's not the best job, and it falls into place. There's only 32 of them, as they like to say, mm-hmm, and they pay pretty well. They kind of set your family up. It's kind of generational money if you're a coach.
Yeah, even if you get fired.
Be careful.
Even if you get fired, you still get paid.
And there are guys that go from hot candidates to falling out of favor if you wait too long,
yep,
too.
That's true. Gerard Mayo, for example, maybe. You know, I mean, I know that he had the job locked up here, but he was getting offers in other places, and nothing ever really went anywhere. And then all of a sudden, it was just him coming to New England. So forget about all that other
stuff. And now nobody here really wants him.
It's kind of true.
Sorry, Gerard.
617-779-7937. The Boston Celtics begin the in-season tournament, or as it's now called, the NBA Cup. It's group stage tonight against the Atlanta Hawks, but I don't want to talk about the Atlanta Hawks. I want to talk about the undefeated 12-0 Cleveland Cavaliers, because guess what, Celtics fans? You got a rival. That's right. The Cleveland Cavs are your rival. We'll get to that next. It's
better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at tmobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.